a pre-recorded version of the WTK Roundtable on WTK, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. This is recorded, though, so if you call in, nobody will answer you.
Inside the MDN studio, Sports Talk 1050, WTK, the ticket online, WTK.com. We say hello to our round table. We have on the phone Craig Ross. Craig, good morning.
Morning. How you guys doing?
Doing really well. Ed Fang. Ed, welcome back. Long time no see.
Yeah, that's right.
Ed was, of course, here Tuesday, part of our really fun March Madness round table with Coach Ramsey and Brendan Quinn. And Brian Cook, of course, is here as well. Brian, good morning.
Morning.
So we'll get to March Madness, a lot of March Madness throughout this, but a topic we have not discussed a whole lot on the show in the last many weeks for many different reasons is back in the news, though, and we should bring this up now. So we'll really quickly ask Brian your thoughts on the events this weekend starting tonight down at Joe Louis Arena.
What's going on at Joe Louis Arena?
Oh, God. out of sight, out of mind. Is that really? So Michigan's won four of their last five. They have obviously three wins over teams that are, or four wins over teams that are pretty good teams this year, especially Penn State and Minnesota in particular. But now, can they carry over those wins and pick up? Is it possible to go on a three game run here at the Joe for this team to get the season to get back to the tournament? It's a long shot. Is it a possibility?
Well, you remember the North Dakota game that Sam gives me stick about constantly?
All the time, yes.
If that happens three times in a row, yes, they can go to the tournament. I mean, they did beat Penn State twice, but, you know, they win with a 46-save shutout from Zach Nagelvoort, and they get outshot 2-1 the previous night.
Yeah, it was like, 80 combined saves or so, 81 saves over the two nights?
I mean, I don't think anything's really changed about this team. They are who they are, and occasionally one of those goalies like comes with it, man. And Nagelvoort had an awesome game on Saturday. But they're still going to get massively outshot. They're still going to have to overcome that. And anything's possible in single elimination hockey, but I wouldn't say that this 4 out of 5 thing, because it's not really 4 out of 5, it's 4 out of 6. Because like they played a game on Friday night, and then one on Saturday night, and they split two weekends, and then they had this sweep against Penn State, their first of the year. So it's going to be tough for them to overturn what they had been this season, because I haven't seen a whole lot of signs of that in the last 3 weeks, despite the increased rate of winning.
It did make the home finale, though, entertaining for the fans, to send the fans out, the seniors out with victories, and so maybe momentum can carry them. I'm not expecting much. If they win two, I'll go to the Joe on Saturday night to watch a championship game. I'm hopeful, not expectful, if that's a right way to put
expectant,
it.
Expectant, probably.
Same thing. Yeah. I'm not a father. I'm not an expectant parent anymore. I have a daughter, so I'm not expecting that. But, yes, I am expected of not it going the way I want. Although I think Michigan can win tonight. I think that playing Penn State for the third game in a row, there's that old adage, beating a team three straight times can be difficult. But on the flip side, Michigan's playing better against them right now, it seems. Although, again, as you mentioned, there were 81 shots in that series that went against them. So,
yeah.
And actually, that's just the saves. There were goals, too. So it's probably more like, 84 shots against them, which is an insane, insane number. I was talking to Sam Piazza and Tony Calderon on Red Show briefly about this on Tuesday night. And, you know, they have the mentality of trimming that down and getting tighter, but it just doesn't seem like, as you said, they are who they are for the most part. They just had better results this weekend, the last few weekends.
Well, and our correspondent, Dave Nasternak, is in the box, and he comes down and shows me the Corsi after the first couple periods, and it's not good. If they beat Penn State again, I will be surprised and impressed, but they've given themselves at least a little confidence going into the game tonight.
Yeah, one other thing I just want to bring up, and we'll switch over to men's basketball, but I'm going to have a brief women's basketball ice hockey conversation in the same moment here. I was on the show on Tuesday, I was talking to Dave Harlock, and we were going back to the late 80s, early 90s, right before the run of all the NCAA tournaments, and he was on a team that won a consolation game in the CCHA playoffs. It shows you how long ago that was.
Yeah.
And they went through the handshake line, and Jerry York, the head coach of Bowling Green at the time, and all the Bowling Green players were congratulating Michigan, saying good luck in the tournament. They had not been in many, many years. And then the selection committee put Bowling Green in and not Michigan, and they got snubbed in it. I'm listening to Hard Luck tell the story, which I've heard many times, and it reminded me of what happened Monday night with the Michigan women's basketball team.
Yeah.
And the question I have for you guys, and Brian, I'll start with you first. I don't think that the formula is anywhere close to correct with the pairwise, but at least with the pairwise, you kind of, you know what you need, right? Months, you know, weeks and weeks leading up to it, you know what, at where you stand, and all that stuff is really just laid out. Can you come up with a formula that's halfway decent for basketball so you can take this out of committee's hands, or is hockey uniquely different because of the amount of teams that are in it?
I think if you were inclined, you could come up with a metric. There's something called wins above bubble that a guy with a blog has that put together, which is actually, I think, a really smart way to approach it. It's like, so if you're an average bubble team and you played this schedule, how many wins would you expect to have versus how many wins does this team actually have? So if you look at the selection that spits out, it's usually pretty good, actually. So I have big problems with the various RPI deficiencies because they use numbers, right? People talking about how, like, oh, you guys are just numbers dorks who don't understand the game. Like, they use numbers, and the numbers are bad.
Well, they use awful numbers.
Well, that's the thing. So we've had this conversation on the show, and Ed, this is right up your alley, obviously, as an analytics guy. At the beginning of the year, Ken Pom even tweeted about how he was approached to, you know, talk about how they could use these other numbers.
Well,
and then they just go right back to basically using the RPI and nothing else almost.
It's like
lip service.
We can't expect the NCAA to change on a dime.
But they said they were going to use these new things, and it looks like they didn't even look at it at all. Wichita would be a great example of that.
Yeah, the committee seatings were pretty off this year, but they did meet with Ben Alomar, Ken Pomeroy, Jeff Zagarin.
Well, I mean, I can meet with anybody. It doesn't mean I'm going to listen to them.
I think there's been progress made. We can't expect them to turn on the dime and all of a sudden, you know, properly seed Arizona as a four. It just takes time. Did I actually mention this on the air last week? The biggest thing that came out of the meeting, I actually talked to one of the people that was in on the meeting. And his biggest frustration was they didn't tell him what they wanted. You know, if the committee tells you what they want, most deserving. No, I want the best teams. If you tell numbers people what you want, then they can give it to you. But if you don't tell them what you want, then we're in a gray area where...
Because you need to create a formula, essentially.
Yeah.
And you can't create a formula without the variables
that go into it.
Well, it's Well, that's a terrible formula. However they spit that formula out, that one's a bad formula.
It's terrible. I'm actually going to work on coding it up so I can just prove to everyone how bad it is. But, yeah, it's awful.
I can't wait. And then find a way to explain it to the layperson.
Well, I can't wait to do college football pre-bowl rankings with RPI, and then everyone will see just how awful it is, and then we can go from there.
Well, so Ken Pomeroy had an article in Slate, you know, discussing the omission of Illinois State, and he pointed out that, okay, they have a couple of bad losses, but when you play teams from like 100 to 200 on the road, you're going to lose some of those games, even if you are an NCAA-quality team. So I went back and I looked at a particular game. They played at Missouri State in their conference schedule. Missouri State was like 130 on Ken Pom. I'm sure their RPI is not very good. And at the beginning of that game, Pomeroy gave them a 63% chance to win. And at that time, they were ranked like an NCAA bubble team. So like that was a difficult game that they came out on top of. And it doesn't look like anything in RPI. And if you lose that game, it looks like a quote-unquote bad loss. But, you know, a road game against anybody who's half-decent is actually a threat.
Yep.
So it's you don't take that into account if you're the NCAA, and so you leave out a team like Illinois State, who was actually ranked 1.5 wins above bubble, which is above Michigan State. It's above a bunch of teams that got on the field. And I think that's a much more fair way to look at it, because Illinois State does not have the option of like playing at a lot of these places, because you can, if you're gaming the RPI like Minnesota did this year, there are teams that are a lot worse than Illinois State that you can get the same RPI bump from. So Minnesota's a 5 this year and Wisconsin's an 8, and as near as I can tell, the only reason for that is because Minnesota played the game really well. Mm-hmm. So they play the game where they have like the number 189 conference schedule on Ken Pom,
Wisconsin's in the same exact range. But in terms of RPI, Wisconsin is like 200+, and Minnesota is 27. Because they played a bunch of 20-win teams from bad conferences. So it's
kind of like Switzerland in the last World Cup.
Exactly. And I think someone at Minnesota needs to get a medal or a raise. But also you need to fix this system. So
so let's bring this back home real quick, and Craig will bring into the conversation. Yeah. So from a Michigan perspective, we've talked about this a lot. What do you do in scheduling for the big boy like a Michigan to eliminate any issues? So I know the scheduling is different. I was asked this question at lunch at the U of M Club of Ann Arbor on Monday, and I kind of know the answer a little bit. But some of it is you don't have that much choice in the give or take 10 games that you just fill out your schedule at home, right? You have just some cupcake games that you play, the guaranteed games. And some of it is just, I'll come up and play you. And sometimes it's a Furman who is a borderline top 100 RPI team. And sometimes it's South Carolina Upstate, which is below 300. So how does Michigan, when they do their schedule, they get their Big Ten ACC tournament game is given to them. They're always in a tournament, you know, so those games are given to them. Then they try to play one or two other big-time games. UCLA is a good one. Texas blew up in their face this year, but that's not Michigan's fault. What do you do for Michigan for scheduling to game the system as much as possible for Michigan's advantage?
Well, I mean, the biggest thing is don't play a SWAC team and don't play a MEAC team. I mean, don't play teams that are 300+. There's always ways to get middling opponents from decent conferences. Like that home and home they had against Bradley was actually a terrific way to go about it, because road game really, really helps. And Bradley was, you know, a decent team in a decent conference. So that was a good approach, and just kind of figure out who's like the best MAC team this year. And they're definitely going to play you. Like, figure out who's the best Horizon team this year, or the second best Horizon team, because anyone who has that, gives you that sweet, like, opponent's record bump is going to be a good matchup. And a game that at home you will expect to win nearly as much as you would the 300-plus teams.
Well, you know, I find the Minnesota thing on one level pretty mystifying. Their schedule really wasn't that good.
It wasn't.
And they don't have really good wins. I think they have Vanderbilt and Vanderbilt on a neutral court and Arkansas at home. They're both in the 30s. Other than that, they didn't beat anyone out of conference. Their in-conference performance was good, but not great. They won a lot of close games. I mean, they won, I think, three at least overtime games, including the ridiculous one against Michigan. For them to be a 5 seed makes no sense whatsoever. It looks to me like, maybe I'm wrong, but it looks to me like the committee decided they were going to slot Michigan in at Wisconsin spot at number 8. And then when Michigan sort of pulled the rug out, and
Hollis directly stated that.
Yeah, he said that basically.
Oh,
they
really?
Yeah, they had the Big Ten winner in the 7th spot and the Big Ten loser in the 8th spot. Although that would have taken some more scrubbing, because Michigan was not going to be scheduled to play Virginia Tech in the first round. So that would have actually taken more scrubbing, but they would have been an 8 seed if they had lost that game.
Yeah, it makes no sense because Michigan clearly had a better season than Minnesota, was a better team than Minnesota. I'm not saying Michigan should be a 5. I personally think they should be a 6. But Minnesota as a 5 makes no sense. Wisconsin got cranked even worse.
Yeah.
For them to be an 8 is ludicrous.
Well, that's a recency bias. I mean, you know. They're human beings on the... I'm not surprised at all.
Recency bias? Like, what has Michigan got to do to get some recency bias?
Well, I mean, you know, they were 11 or, you know, on the bubble like 3 weeks ago, 3, 4 weeks ago.
Well,
they won 10 of their last 12 games, and they got an overtime loss, and they got a loss on the buzzer to Northwestern. I mean, in the past, we've heard noises about, well, how you finish makes a difference.
They made a very clear point that that was not a part of the committee is not using that as criteria anymore. And it's funny.
They clearly are.
And they how you've played in the last 3 weeks or so of your season, I think should definitely fact, if they're going to use injuries and, you know, Coach K being out for a few games as, you know, factors that help you in your seeding, I think how you play in your last 3 weeks should definitely be a factor, because if you're a really good team for the last 3 weeks, you're already in, but those 3 weeks are way better than, say, the previous three. That's the team that you are at the moment, and so you should be treated as that team. But the committee has backed away from that to look at these overall resumes. And I mean, we could spend the rest of the time complaining about how they do seeding and all that kind of stuff, but instead what we should do, guys, is we'll start breaking down the brackets. We'll start with Michigan Obviously, Michigan being in the top right corner in the Midwest region, taking on Oklahoma State. That game is tomorrow at 12:15. We'll talk about the Midwest region, and we'll go from there as we continue here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the ticket. Welcome back inside the MDN studios. Ira Weintraub. Sam is heading down to Indianapolis. He will be at the open practice later today, the media avail as well, and he will check in tomorrow. In fact, he'll be broadcasting live from Indianapolis tomorrow as Michigan gets ready for their 12-15 game against Oklahoma State in the first round of the NCAA tournament. Brian Cook is here. Ed Fang is here. Craig Ross is in Hawaii. I don't know how Craig could miss this beautiful weather we're having here, but he's in Hawaii suffering while we had this beautiful 20 degrees and snow still on the ground. So, guys, Indianapolis, Michigan, Oklahoma State. I know most of us are not happy with the 7 seed, would have preferred a 6, but they're in a 7-10 matchup. I'm really glad it's not the 7-10 matchup where they have to face Wichita State.
Yes.
Oklahoma State definitely presents challenges, but I kind of like the matchup.
Mm-hmm.
Brian, what are your thoughts?
I agree. This kind of reminds me of the VCU matchup, where Michigan is playing a team that is very transition dependent. They're very turnover dependent, and Michigan simply does not give up many transition opportunities and doesn't give up many turnovers. So this is, you know, a game where they crash the offensive boards really, really hard, and I think that's going to be a problem for Michigan. But they make sacrifices doing that, so they give up a lot of transition opportunities. And I was actually looking up this on hoopmath.com. Michigan is 11th in the country in effective field goal percentage in transition.
Wow. I bet you if you had looked at that number like 2 months ago, it would be way worse.
No, Michigan's always very good at transition.
They seem like they just were not great at finishing in transition earlier in the year. It just seems like that eyes are up a little bit more now. Maybe it's just me seeing them play better as a whole.
Well, when you have transition threes from Duncan Robinson.
Yeah, exactly.
I think
that's what bumps that efficiency, right? Because you get on the break and kick to some shooters. Yeah, I mean, numbers support everything that Brian has watched in these games of Oklahoma State. They're third in offensive rebounding, adjusted for schedule. They are 30th in the nation in forcing turnovers. So, I like that matchup, too. I mean,
it's an interesting matchup. Now, the best matchup, individual matchup, Craig, on the floor, is going to be Walton versus Evans, although the wing matchup is really important, too. But that point guard matchup, we've seen that Derek have a few of those lately, and he seems to relish in those. What are your thoughts on that point guard matchup?
Well, I think this will be maybe his hardest matchup of the year. Juwan Evans can really, really play. He's incredibly quick. He's a good passer. This is a tough one. And I think the game is... I think it may be a very, very close game. I think KenPom has it as a 1-point game and a 51-49 game. I mean, their strength to some extent, matches with our weakness, which is on their offensive rebounding and our defensive rebounding. On the other hand, I watched the Kansas Oklahoma State game last night, and they really are a bad defensive team. I mean, Oklahoma State, I think, is perhaps the number one offense in the country in terms of efficiency. But they're really not a good defensive team. They sort of don't move their feet. They stand around on defense. They give up a lot of open looks. At least they did in this particular game. But they can really play on the offensive end, and they're quick and they go to the board. So I see it as not I don't see it as a bad matchup, but I see it as a very close game, a game that could go either way.
What I talked to Sam about for tempo, and Brian, I know you guys have all broken down these numbers. Oklahoma State in the top part of very fast, Michigan in the bottom part of slowing that pace down. Yep. But Michigan can play a faster pace against certain teams. I think that this is a game where they want to control pace. They'll run, as you said, they're very efficient when they go in transition. Yeah. But their ability to not turn the ball over and their ability to not, when they make their shots, they're not giving up, misses and then rebounds and then that turns into transition. That in itself, just making your shots and not turning the ball over, shouldn't that slow down Oklahoma State enough to make the game a little more comfortable for Michigan?
Well, yeah, and they abandoned the offensive boards, right? So Michigan is barely worse in transition in terms of field goal efficiency than they are in half-court offense. That's like 53 versus 51. So if you're trying to push it up-tempo against Michigan, you're pretty much going up against a set defense almost all the time anyway. And Oklahoma State isn't very efficient at their transition because they push it so much, right? So they're taking kind of marginal transition opportunities and going at it.
So they like Iowa a little bit in how fast they want to play. I know Iowa wants to shoot in the first 10 seconds.
Yeah, I mean, they're even more up-tempo. Like, I watched their game against Baylor, and the color guy kept going on and on about how their coach was demanding that they get a ball shot up in the first 7 seconds. So
that's fast.
And he's the guy who was at Stephen F. Austin mm-hmm. when they made the Sweet 16, and they were also this kind of just up-tempo team. But we've seen teams try to speed Michigan up like this, and it just doesn't really work. And if they make sacrifices on their defense to make their offense so good. So they send so many guys to the boards that they give up opportunities for other teams in transition. And that's not a good way to play Michigan, I don't think. But it's also kind of baked into who they are. The other thing that I like about this matchup is that their center, Mitchell Solomon, never posts up. He is a role guy. He's an offensive rebound guy. He is not a guy who's going to get his own shot and get Mo into foul trouble.
Yes.
Yeah, my biggest issues are fouls and fatigue going into pretty much every game at this point. And if you can eliminate the fouls and the bigs, I'm a little concerned about the fouls on the guards because of how heavy they are with what they do with the guards. But this will be a game probably for X to get, you know, a bunch more of those minutes as with the shorter lineup out there, maybe with DJ at the five sometimes and rotating the bigs more at the five and getting more guards on the floor because there's a lot of guards on the floor for Oklahoma State.
Craig, you were about to say something?
Well, no, I think it's your point, Brian, about Solomon is a really good one. I mean, in the game I watched last night, he was strictly a high post center. They get the ball to him in the high post. He doesn't look like he's a great shooter from 15, 16 feet. He doesn't look first for a shot. He's looking to find guys open for the three. I mean, Oklahoma State is a good shooting team. I mean, they shot over 40% on the year from three, but they don't also shoot a high number of threes.
I just think that's a good matchup. I mean, I think Michigan closes out shooters pretty well. They may hit some, but that doesn't concern me. I mean, I like that there's no post presence. I like that there's a lower chance that Mo gets in foul trouble. That's huge for Michigan.
I was also tooling around on hoopmath.com and had this discovery. Guess who the number one team in the country is at forcing 2-point jumpers?
Michigan?
It's Michigan.
Oh.
Yeah. Wow. And that is unprecedented in the Beeline era, and they're nowhere near that. They don't let people get to the rim, and they don't let people shoot.
So they
threes.
Force the shots that are your favorite shots in basketball.
Exactly. And they're terrible at defending them. But it doesn't matter.
But if you force the worst shots, then you'll live with it.
They're at 40% on 2-point jumpers.
Yeah, so you'll live with it. And these conversations that Brian's kind of having, these are going back to weeks and weeks and weeks of conversations on this show, the numbers that would adjust themselves. What Oklahoma State is kind of what Michigan was, right? The poor man version of Michigan where they weren't playing very good defense. They were very efficient offense. And now Michigan's still very efficient offense, but Michigan's defense has become a lot better in the last few weeks.
Yeah, I mean, there's the pre-Maverick team and then there's a post-Maverick team.
We love Maverick Morgan.
And the post-Maverick team is the number 8 team in the country.
That's crazy.
It is. So I've looked up like
Billy D.
But, I mean, but that's the way they played, right?
Yeah. Is there one of those Assistant Coach of the Year awards in college basketball? Like doing the is there a Broyles for?
There's got to be
for men's basketball.
Sure
we give it to Billy D. Just for the last 2 months.
I think the way his the overall season looks, it's probably not going to happen.
Right, but for 2 months, that's a remarkable turnaround. So that matchup, you guys, I'm assuming that you guys all three are expecting Michigan to win.
I am.
I think it's going to be a tight game. I mean, it's basically 51%.
I didn't say that it wouldn't be a tight game, but you do think Michigan will win. Beeline, the amazing stat, the 15-1 number. He's 10-0 in first round Big Ten tournament games and 5-1 in first round games at Michigan in the NCAA tournament. And we know about the short turnaround is going to could play in their favor as well. But he has his teams ready. The one time was the Ohio game, and he talked about it at the press conference yesterday, that he ran the team too hard that week of practice, and they ran out of legs, and their shots were short, and he changed his philosophy after that. So,
yeah, that speaks really well for Coach.
They get off to a good start. His numbers here are pretty excellent. Craig, what are your thoughts on the rest of that bracket, the Midwest region?
I like Louisville. Plus, they probably are throwing money around like usual at referees. So, I like them coming out of the bracket. I see a Louisville-Kentucky matchup. This year I'm sort of leaning to Kentucky overall. I know they're not coached very well on offense, but defensively I think they're pretty good. And
Craig, they're not in the same region, right?
They are not.
No, they're in the Midwest, aren't they?
No, I mean, Louisville and Kansas are in.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Kansas is the one in that region. Louisville's the two.
I don't know if you meant that as a Final Four matchup or...
In any event, I got Kentucky going through.
Yeah, Kentucky's in the South, and Kentucky and Louisville will be in the same building tomorrow, and they most likely will win in Sunday, which if Michigan's playing Louisville on Sunday, that Kentucky fan base is going to be a benefit to Michigan.
It is.
Because that Kentucky fan base is going to dominate that building, and we know there's no chance in... You know what? That they're going to root for Louisville in a game. And in fact, they'll probably be adamantly rooting against Louisville in a game, which allows Michigan to have some sort of a feel in that crowd, which would be a nice thing in Indy because obviously Louisville's pretty close there, but Kentucky's going to dominate that building. Not tomorrow during the day, but it's going to be pretty neutral during the day, I think.
Louisville is an interesting and a deeply strange team.
Very strange, yes.
So they have four centers, and they play two of them at the same time. And you could classify them as a power forward if this was 1980, but it's not. And they're all like 6'9" or 6'11" or 7-foot shot blockers, and they don't shoot threes. None of these guys, and they rebound and they block shots. And they sometimes play this weird like 2-in-3-out zone with like two of their centers just kind of hanging out. So but they can't shoot. Like I look at this Louisville matchup, and it doesn't seem that bad for me either.
Yeah, if you look at the twos, I don't dislike of the twos that Michigan could have been opposite as a 7 seed. I don't mind the matchup. It's not, none of the twos are going to be easy to face, obviously. But they're a bad – it's going to be right. This really good offensive team against a really good defensive team and then a what are they doing on offensive team against a team that is a resurgent now defensive team. It's going to be a really – if that's what we get on Sunday, that's going to be a really interesting matchup. And Michigan on a short turnaround, they got a shot to get to the second weekend.
I mean, if they get as many shots as both of these teams, I think Michigan wins handily. If they have shot parity against Oklahoma State, they win handily. If they have shot parity against Louisville, they win handily. Now, that's a tough order because these are two of the best offensive rebounding teams in the country.
They'll miss a fair amount of their misses. So,
if they can just get some offensive rebounds and defend their own glass decently, I think Michigan's in the Sweet 16 team.
Oh, that's great. I mean, I hope you're right. I like Michigan slightly against Oklahoma State. I don't like their chances against Louisville, but... Man, I hope you're right. Although I hadn't thought of the crowd element.
I have Kansas coming out of the region. I don't like it, but that's kind of what I ended up with by default. Who do you guys have coming out of that region?
I don't know. Michigan.
There you go. Homer pick.
It's not a homer pick.
See, I feel like I almost – because I have Michigan playing Kansas in the Elite Eight. And I guess maybe I went with the it's in Kansas City thing, but I was there in Dallas, and that crowd in Dallas was very pro-Kansas. There was a crap ton of those fans, and it obviously didn't matter in the final 10 minutes of that game. But that was lovely. And it was on again yesterday. I was thoroughly enjoying watching it again on replay yesterday. I wanted to pick Michigan and go to the Final Four because I have seen the way they played lately. I feel like it's too homery of me to do that, which is probably why I went with Kansas. I want to be wrong. I think Michigan can definitely get to the Final Four. I kind of think the winner of the Michigan-Louisville game will get there, but I'll pick Kansas because I don't want to seem like a homer, I think is what it feels like. I might change that before picture locked in at noon. I may actually make that change.
Kansas is a relatively weak one seed.
They have Bill Self.
True. And they haven't been playing as well as Michigan over the past
That's very true. Let's go to the region below it as we continue here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTK. The ticket online at WTK.com. We'll get the phone calls in a minute at 734-998-1050. The South region, Carolina's the one seed. Kentucky is the two seed. A lot of people are looking at a potential Wichita-Kentucky game in the second round as a very intriguing matchup.
Awesome.
Could be a really good game. I will thoroughly enjoy that if that's the case. But who do you guys have coming out of that region?
UCLA.
Oh gosh!
See, I looked at UCLA Kentucky, and I thought that the winner of that game will go to the Final Four. I have Kentucky actually winning the whole thing.
I watched that game against Michigan, and I just can't pick against UCLA.
I just don't trust Alford in March. Until he proves me otherwise, I have this big. That's my biggest thing picking brackets is I go back to coaches. And I have coaches that I have a lot of confidence in and coaches I have very little confidence in. Happens to be that Bill Self is one of them. And it happens to be that Steve Alford is another one. He hasn't done it at UCLA yet to really, I guess, put me in that position. But he has never really done anything in March.
Well, then you would actually really like North Carolina out of this region because Roy Williams' team since 2002 have outperformed regular season expectation more than any other coach. I actually like North Carolina. I think they're the most complete team in this entire
I'm not sure that
tournament.
They do it. I agree. I think they are the most complete team. I'm not sure that they put it together game in and game out, which is why I have Luton to Kentucky. Before noon happens, I'll end up changing half of my picks after having this conversation. But I
don't even have a bracket. I might.
That's a bummer because people should get in a pool with you, Brian.
Go to the top of the top of at Michigan Insiders.
What's that supposed to mean?
I have a pinned link. You just enter our challenge there, and people can compete against you there.
All right. Well. I don't want to humiliate you guys too badly.
That's fine. So you have UCLA, have Carolina.
UCLA, I mean, I've never seen a team be so bad at closing out shooters as UCLA.
I know,
they're obviously not totally that bad, and I know they can score.
They can score.
They are by far the worst defensive team of any team that could legitimately have a chance of winning this tournament.
I know,
and
but like,
gotta scare you.
I like those teams though. Like that was Michigan with Stauskas, right? They were that team.
Yeah,
and they were.
2014?
Yeah, but they didn't win, so.
They were in the Elite Eight.
And they were shot away from the Final Four, which I think that this Michigan team is playing, the how they're getting their points is obviously very different, but I think this team's playing as well as that team in 2014 was, because the 2014 team did not play as well in February and beginning of March as this team is.
True.
So, but to get back to the South bracket, you have Kentucky, Craig?
Yeah, I have Kentucky playing Louisville. In the
Final Four.
I guess Final Four, yeah. I've got Kentucky coming through their bracket.
All right, so that's the right side of the bracket. We'll get to the left side of the bracket on the other side of the break. Before we go to the break, let's go to Don in Ann Arbor. Good morning, Don.
Hi. I wanted to shift the conversation to hockey for just a second.
Sure.
If I may. Bear Bryant retired at 69, so did Scotty Bowman. John Wooden stepped down at 65. Fielding Yost retired as head football coach at 55. Red Berenson's now 78 years old, and he'll be 79 in next December. Can you envision a scenario that in which he returns for one more season? And if so, what would your opinion think about that? Be about that.
I don't, but I didn't last year either. So I was of the opinion that Michigan was going to make a change, and then they did not. Red told the Daily, I don't know if this was a press conference, but he told the Daily that he was specifically asked to stay on by Ward because he was unable to put together a hockey search in that brief amount of time after he got hired. So if that was the rationale, that is no longer applicable. So I would assume that there will be a coaching change. And there was an agent who put up some post about how Michigan has its next hockey coach, and it was a great hire. And that was deleted, and it's an agent. So agents often jump the gun on this stuff because they're privy to non-completed negotiations. That could mean that they've gone off the board, and the board currently reads Mel Pearson and nobody else. So if a random Red Wings connected agent thinks he knows who Michigan's next hockey coach is, that could be a number of different guys who have connections to the NHL that Mel doesn't. So,
those reports though have been Mike Spath refuted those reports in a strong way that Michigan's not in that stage yet.
I believe that, and I also believe that there might be something to them anyway. So I've gotten a little intel on this myself as well. So. It's always a very fuzzy thing because there's search committees and nobody's contacted anybody. And I've done my share of coaching searches, and I know that Spath is correct, but I also feel like this might be an indicator that it won't actually be Mel.
David Cutcliffe turned Michigan down, by the way, in case you hadn't heard.
Who did?
David Cutcliffe.
Oh, Cutcliffe. Yeah,
he turned Michigan down, by the way, in case you hadn't heard. Search committee. Search group. Yeah.
Yep.
We'll get to the left side of the bracket and more as we continue here with the round table. Brian Cook, Ed Fang, Craig Ross here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the ticket. Always got to get a little Let's Dance played again before we get out of here. It's that time of year. It's dance time. March Madness is like 2.5 hours away.
Happy March, guys.
This is
awesome day.
This is an awesome day, an awesome weekend. I was asked the other day about my favorite sport and, you know, just in general as a sports fan, your favorite sport. And I was having this conversation. I said, I have to get more specific than that.
Yeah, no,
because
exactly.
Because college football is my, like, for –
like if you want to break it down even more specifically, just football, right? But March Madness is my number one. College football then is my number two. But
we're talking about events. That's different.
Right. So you're getting it's more specific. But I separate March from everything. March Madness is the best 3 weeks of the year. It's just awesome.
March Madness like elevates college basketball, right?
Correct.
Like, football is my favorite sport because it provides the bulk of my income and because it's awesome. soccer is my favorite sport to watch. In terms of watching, like, there's nothing that'll beat a World Cup. But basketball, college basketball, March Madness is...
I can come up with a lot of things to beat a World Cup, but that's another conversation for another
Aren't we supposed to argue on this show, Ira?
No.
That's why I brought that up. Brian, you got my back, right?
I do, but... Thank you. Can we talk about the USA roster that just came out?
Yeah, we're going to talk about the left side of the bracket instead. And we're going to talk about the East region where... Everybody that's a college basketball person, like that wants to see, you know, this one of those fun events.
Yeah.
They want to see Villanova Duke at Madison Square Garden, the last two national champs squaring off against each other at the world's most famous arena. And I think it's a very intriguing bracket, but I do think it's a crash collision course between the one and the two to play at MSG, which could be just an unbelievable matchup. Ed, how do you see the East region shaking out?
Yeah, I think this is the region of death. I think it's very hard. I think Wisconsin's a sneaky 8 seed, a lot of talent on that team. Virginia's the 5 seed, a top 10 team by just about every numbers metric that you can put out there.
And I don't even have them winning their first round game. How about that?
Yeah, exactly. And no, I don't think anyone had those two teams winning their first round games. I think this is, like, especially Nova's side of the bracket is tough. Nova's a team that likes to jack up a lot of threes, which has hurt them in the tournament in the past. Duke.
They just won the national title.
Yeah, but before that, they had a history of going out pretty quick. So,
Jay Wright does have a couple of Final Fours, including last year's championship run.
He's got two, right?
Yeah, here in Detroit.
Their approach to the game has served Villanova well, I believe.
Right, but they've gone back to jacking up the threes, so they might stop like they did in the tournament last year. But
threes are good shots, Ed Fang.
They also go hot and cold. And, this Duke team, if you would have set this bracket a week before it actually got set, you would have had a completely different picture of this Duke team, which kind of shows you how up and down they've been. So, I know everyone wants to see Villanova Duke, but this is a hard region.
I want Duke to lose to Troy.
I want to see Duke lose whenever they can possibly lose. This morning on our Great Moments in NCAA Tournament History, the Lehigh game from five years ago popped up. It was just a great memory. I mean, everyone wants to see Duke lose, but as far as just a basketball game, Villanova Duke could be a tremendous basketball game.
Well, so it's not going to happen. And I'll tell you why.
You have SMU coming out every
year. Is everybody 6'6" to 6'8"? Like, how's Grayson Allen going to get a shot off? Like,
that's the thing about Duke. It's like a lot of one-on-one on offense. It's Kennard and Allen like driving from the wings, and it's Tatum taking these pull-up jump shots.
So, Brian, you have SMU. Ed, who do you have out of the region?
I didn't say I have SMU. Like, I think that they're going to be Duke.
Villanova. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I have Villanova coming out, but I mean, that's the region I would expect. Yeah,
I have Duke beating Villanova, but as I said, I may change all my picks before noon hits. So, Craig, who do you have in the East?
Well, I like Villanova coming out there. I'm a big fan of Jalen Brunson. I think point guard play always seems to be, for whatever reason, most important in this tournament. I think he may be about as good a point guard as there is. So I like Villanova.
And then the bottom bracket over there, the West region, Gonzaga's the one, Arizona's the two. Ed, you are not a fan of the strength of this region.
Yeah, no, I think Gonzaga's a heck of a team. I think they got a great draw.
I'm going with Arizona. I don't know why, really, to be honest.
We just talked about all their flaws.
I know. I think that a lot of their flaws were established when they didn't have Trin a lot of earlier in the year. I like the way when they play at their best, they're really good. I just don't like the region very much. I don't know who to pick in that region. I wanted to knock Maryland out in the first round because I don't have any faith in their coach, but Xavier's depleted with injuries, and I don't trust Florida State away from Tallahassee. So all of a sudden, a team I didn't think would win their first game I have in the Sweet 16. So I don't like this region at all picking games. I'll probably get like two games right. I have Notre Dame losing to Arizona in the regional final. What do I know?
I think it'll be Gonzaga, but I think the team that we're not talking about that we should be talking about is West Virginia. That is a brutal press turnover team, and if you're not a Michigan and you can't control the ball, you are going to get got. And they have
But Notre Dame's got great point guard play. I think that's what is going to help Notre Dame beat West Virginia. I don't trust West Virginia's backcourt.
Notre Dame's soft though. Like, you got Bonzi got 6'5" center. What are you doing?
I know. As I said, I don't know what I'm doing.
That's,
apparently,
that's the way they roll.
I know that's the way they roll.
Who do you have winning it all, Craig? Who do you have as your national champ?
I went back and forth on this, but I think I'm going to go with Kentucky against Gonzaga. That's how I see it. I know that Kentucky's not well coached on the offensive side, but
they got talent.
They have talent, ability. I think they do play hard on the defensive end. I think I'm gonna have them winning.
Ed,
what do you guys think?
Your national champ?
Yeah, I think it's pretty close between Gonzaga and North Carolina. I think North Carolina is just a little bit more of a complete team.
Brian, your national champ is UCLA.
All praise Maverick Morgan. I'm going with Michigan.
There you go. There you go. I like it. I like it. Guys, enjoy the dance, the first week of it. We'll see everybody again next week. Thanks to Brian Cook for being here, Craig Ross for being on the phone, Ed Fang for being here as well. Thanks to everybody for listening. Sam will be live from Indianapolis tomorrow. Michael Spath is live from the Pretzel Bell next to get you ready for more March Madness. The dance is just a couple hours away. This is the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTK, The Ticket, the official voice of Michigan sports.
Better than us!
No!